Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back. It's the 11th of December, 2012, and this is It's All About Food. Now, you know me. I talk about food all the time, and I like to say that eating a healthy diet is really important, and really keeping an eye on the oil, salt, sugar, all of that stuff, but that doesn't mean that from time to time we can't have a treat. And a treat is something that we don't have all the time. That's what makes it a treat. Hello. And I know the standard American diet today, people are treating every hour. And I think it might even be a little boring when you're getting all that gooey, sweet, whatever you want every moment of the day. Just my opinion. But there are moments when treats are wonderful and deserved, and we should have them made from wonderful quality ingredients that are gentle on the planet and cruelty-free. And there's one person who does this best, and we're going to be talking to her right now. She's a native New Yorker. Fran Costigan is the queen of vegan dessert. She's an internationally recognized culinary instructor, author, consultant, recipe developer, and the pioneering vegan pastry chef who marries healthy eating with sumptuous tastes. The Fran factor is her unique ability to transform traditional desserts into modern, healthful, and luscious vegan desserts that satisfy vegans and omnivores alike. In Fran's recipes, nothing is missing except the dairy, eggs, white sugar, and excess fat. She is the authority on all things related to vegan baking and desserts, a graduate of the New York Restaurant School, the Natural Gourmet Institute, and Nick Malgorie's Professional Pastry Intensive. Today, Fran teaches her unique courses at the Institute of Culinary Education, the Natural Gourmet Institute, including her always sold-out Vegan Baking Boot Camp Intensive, and at other venues throughout the U.S. and Canada. Fran's second cookbook, More Great Good Dairy-Free Desserts Naturally, is designed as a complete course in vegan baking. And she just finished working on her second cookbook. Oh, her third cookbook, I'm sorry. Irresistible Chocolate Vegan Desserts for Everyone, Unapologetically Delicious, Decadent, Dark, Organic, and Fair. And that will be coming out next year. We're going to be talking about that and a lot more. Welcome to It's All About Food, my wonderful friend, Fran.
Thank you.
You know, it's really nice to have a friend like you because you're always bringing chocolates wherever you are.
This is true. Thank you for that lovely welcome, Karen. And I really enjoyed your interview with Chad, a dear friend. And
one crazy sexy chef.
He is fat. He is a good-looking man and a great chef and a wonderful teacher. A wonderful teacher.
Mm-hmm. I want to go watch his video on how to steam vegetables.
How to steam. You know, because I teach so much, for such a long time, I've met so many people that I have still trained myself to have a beginner's mind. There really are people who, whether it's the terminology, steaming, or really are nervous about the idea of going into the kitchen and making their own food, boiling water or steam, you know, steaming seems like a gourmet term. I suggest to people that they might have made themselves a cup of tea sometime and that would have involved boiling water. But it's all, we just need to show each other.
I'm just thinking right now, probably a lot of people don't know how to boil water because they have automatic coffee makers.
Oh, right.
And they just fill it up and press a button.
That's right. Yuck. Yeah. Right. Or those in Europe, and I see a lot of it here, too, where people plug those pots in to make the boiling water.
Right.
But stoves work.
Yeah.
Or people who boil water in a microwave oven.
Yeah.
You know,
Anyway,
the fact is, everything that you know...
So keep it simple.
Keep it simple. And do what works, what feels comfortable to you. Once you start making a little bit of food for yourself, it's a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been working day and night, really. I've had a pretty unbalanced life, and I believe in balance, in the last week because I was finishing up the manuscript for the new chocolate vegan book, and I'm very excited about it. So I'm in New York City. I can pick up the phone and I can get a green juice delivered and I can get, you know, a bean salad or whatever. And I was doing that for a while. I did that for 2 days and then something just didn't feel okay. Even though the restaurants I chose were all right, I wasn't making the food. My energy wasn't in the food and I kind of went, duh.
Yeah, well, even if you're not making the food, there's an opportunity for there to be a lot of oil or salt.
Yeah, exactly.
There are some wonderful restaurants in this city, but still, they're trying to maximize their profit, and you don't know all the ingredients that are going into what they're making.
It's true. So I didn't like the way I felt, and I just thought, this is so simple. I keep a pretty well-stocked pantry. And even when it's not, one of the best things about following a Whole Foods plant-based diet is you can always eat. So I had, you know, this bath diet. I call them. People look at the salads that I eat. They go, is that for you? I say, yes. Greens and whatever I had, I ate down the fridge. Greens, avocado, cucumbers, celery.
You're making me hungry.
It was a really delicious salad. And I felt better. It's a little way of taking control. Like, I didn't need oil. I'm not an oil shunner because I use oil in my desserts. But I don't use it where I don't need it. You know, the avocado took care of the fat that I was craving.
That's my favorite fat.
Yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. And about the kale salad, I did that too. It was really good. And it gives me an opportunity to get up from the computer and go and massage my kale a little bit. So it's just wonderful. But that said, I have been tasting a lot of chocolate for the last year. But this book is going to be quite unique. There hasn't been to date a chocolate book. Chocolate is pretty universally loved for people who exclude from their diets milk, dairy of all kinds, eggs, and refined white sugar. And those are products that I do not use. I also do not use any what I call marginal or fake foods. Now, I am not making people who use products that I choose not to use wrong. I want to make that really clear. There's room for everyone, but I have not needed to, and I don't want to, so I don't use palm oil. I'm not talking about chocolate chips. There are some chocolate chips in the chocolate chip cookie, but I'm talking about high percentage chocolates. And I learned so much, you know, throughout the research for this book was so interesting.
Did you start with history of chocolate?
The book is designed so that the first chapter is pretty information dense. You can go to it if you wish. Not everybody, or you can just go to a recipe in a chapter that you might be interested in. There are there's a truffle chapter, chocolate truffles, cakes, showstoppers, which are multi-part, but doable in stages, ice creams, puddings, cooked, raw, gluten-free, and confections as well. Did I say cookies and bars?
No,
cookies and bars. But what I did was I have a big lot information about the ingredients. People say, "Oh, you're vegan. Do you you're doing a chocolate book? That's great. What do you use for chocolate?"
People don't understand.
They
equate milk and butter with chocolate.
Right.
I think they're even confused when they see cocoa butter as an ingredient.
Well, thank you for saying this. So yeah, I decided to do a really complete glossary and then at the front of each chapter, because there are different types of desserts and within the types there are subtypes. I write the way I think, so I will go to a section, a chapter, usually in the front or the back of the book that has explanations, but I want to know about what do I need to know to bake a good cake at the cake chapter, for example? So I did a complete section on chocolate, and I really had to rethink the way I was labeling chocolate. I'm thinking high percentage. Now, what that means is today, practically at Duane Reade's, you know, at any major drugstore chain, you see 70% on the bar or 80% in big print.
Yeah.
What that means is that's the percentage of chocolate solids, which is the cocoa mass, the unsweetened chocolate, the chocolate liqueur, which is not alcohol, and chocolate butter, which is not dairy. It's the fat.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's, I'm not very good at math, but if it's a 70% bar, it's 70% chocolate and about 30% sugar. So the higher the percentage, the lower the sugar. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting more chocolate. More chocolate. However, the percentage is not a guarantee of quality because you need to do a little homework. You need to taste a few bars. It all starts with the beans. How are they selected? How are they fermented? How are they handled? Roasted or not? And then, if it's made well, also with the artisanal small batch chocolate makers now, how they prepare this chocolate bean to bar is proprietary information. So you can, and then you throw in on, add on top of that, we have personal tastes. Our palates are different.
Mm-hmm.
So one bar that 170% might taste creamier to me and sweeter, whereas you might take a bite and say, oh, this is really dark. This is really bitter. So it turns out that what I was calling until now bittersweet or semi-sweet chocolate is a misnomer.
Oh.
They are dark chocolates with different percentages. Actually, according to the FDA, now I'm doing this from memory.
Okay, let's get the FDA in here.
Only to be called bittersweet, a chocolate, the percentage of chocolate need only be 35%.
Whoa, that's nothing.
Clearly, the difference between a bar that is made with, if it's just labeled bittersweet, but made with 35%, it's going to taste really different from one that's made with 85%.
I think it's going to taste sweet.
It's going to taste sweet to me. Yeah, so there you go. So the percentages are a guide. I like the idea of using high percentage chocolate for a number of reasons. There's less sugar. There's more chocolate. I like using less sugar with the idea that these are desserts. And going back to what you said about treats, if you eat these desserts that I make all throughout the day, I don't see that they're treats anymore. So whereas I start many of my classes or conversations with, there is no holy grail of sweetener, and these are treats made to be enjoyed once in a while, but when you enjoy them, make it good.
Make it really
good. Make it really good.
I think a lot of people have a palate that doesn't know how to taste many flavors. And they've grown accustomed to accepting low quality that has sugar and artificial flavors and a lot of fat. And they don't even know what good is.
Yeah, but you can retrain really easily.
Mm-hmm.
Once, I mean, I know that eating my version of a clean diet, my whole foods plant-based diet, because as we know, you and I have discussed this as friends in conversation many times, vegan does not equal healthy. You can be a candy bar vegan. I eat seasonal foods that are whole, organic. You know, I have green every day, many times a day, and grains and beans. And
but when it's party time,
when it's
you
party
bring
time,
the chocolate cake.
I'm happy to have my chocolate, but I want it to be delicious. And so, having grown up on those, I don't know, foil kissy things, those waxy things.
Mm-hmm.
The high percentage chocolates, and I'm talking about the ones that are high quality, they're a phenomenon because you're tasting chocolate. You need less, really, because there is more chocolate inherently when in something that's 70% or 85%. And I know because I have met so many people in this line of dessert work that I am doing, to my surprise and delight, and the delight of my friends, I must say, that they say, wow, you know, I could really eat a small, I can have a smaller piece and feel satisfied. Mm-hmm. I can have a truffle that isn't the size of a golf ball or a baseball and feel satisfied. But you need to use quality, good stuff. Also, you know, when you take the excess fat out, and there is excess sugar and excess fat in commercial food just because it's cheaper and our palates, the general public's palates might be worse used to that. You taste the chocolate. The chocolate isn't masked. This, I know mm-hmm. because I have really, really, I have
now,
experienced it.
Some people
it.
Like chocolate, just plain chocolate. I like when chocolate's married with something else, either chocolate with some nut or chocolate mm-hmm. with some sort of bread cake, cookie, something or other. I feel like I taste the chocolate better when it comes with something.
You might.
That's just me.
You might. Well, chocolate and nuts are really a historic pairing. They, you know, the nuts, there's this symbiotic thing that goes on that's remarkable. I have a recipe. You know, there are recipes in this book for every level of expertise or how much time you have in a particular day or whatever. And again, many of the component recipes, the components can be done in advance. So you learn mm-hmm. to make a ganache, which is typically an emulsion of heavy cream and chocolate. Okay. And then sometimes butter is added. And then sometimes corn syrup is added. This is getting kind of icky mm-hmm. to me. Mine are non-dairy milks, creams. I've even got one with orange juice. So you'll be able to tailor what works for you in this. But let's say you've done this ganache, which is not very difficult to do. You need to follow my rule books. I have Fran's rule book for making perfect truffles or perfect ice cream or whatever at the front of each chapter. Then you've got this in your refrigerator. And let's say I said, you told me you were coming into the city with Gary. Karen, come on over. I want to serve you a little something. It's holiday time. And I make you a little chocolate crostini. I toast some wonderful sourdough or sprouted wheat bread until it's crunchy. Spread it while it's warm with some of this melty ganache. Mm-hmm. For you, you mm-hmm. like nuts, maybe there'll be some chopped hazelnuts on the top. And a teeny crush of a finishing salt, maybe, maybe not. A little drizzle of olive oil, maybe, maybe not. Mm. But you can see the possibilities.
Right.
They are endless. They are wonderful. I've also got a vegan Not tella, if you know what I mean, in the book.
Oh.
It's really good.
I was talking about Nutella recently because they've been in the news.
Yeah.
In France, they are talking about levying a tax on foods with palm oil. Something like a 30% tax, but I'm not exactly sure how it works out. And so the Nutella company is up in arms because there's a lot of palm oil in their hazelnut spread.
And milk powder.
Those are the two top ingredients,
yes,
actually.
There's
milk
very
and palm
little
oil,
chocolate
not,
and there's very little
yeah.
hazelnut.
Anyway.
That's really interesting. Well, Karen, let me say that there is not one recipe with palm oil in my book. I don't use it. It's just something I do not use.
That's
I haven't
fine.
Needed to.
I have. I'm on the fence about palm oil, and I know a lot of people are really quite adamantly against it. I think there's a lot to it, and people are concerned about palm oil because there's a lot of monocropping of palm oil in many third world countries, devastating the rainforest, and it's not good for the environment. And I acknowledge that, but I also acknowledge there are bigger issues to the rainforest. And sometimes I think is the whole palm oil story a distraction to the bigger issue, which is cattle ranching and soy production to feed cows, which is a bigger piece of the rainforest destruction puzzle, unfortunately. It's all important.
It's all important. It's all really important. What it comes down to. So as long as I've been able to, I'm keeping it a little bit more local. I have found that using olive oil from California, California Olive Ranch, in my, to make desserts that require fat, is just wonderful. When you switch from a salad shortening, so we would say butter here, to an a solid, a liquid is all fat, you need less. You need 25% less. So I use just enough to make the dessert taste good. The fat-free desserts, cakes, I'm talking about a truffle, is, it's not a fat-free dessert, but it is certainly a no-fat-added dessert. I've got my truffle recipe going into Rip Esselstyn's upcoming book, and you know that no fat
right.
is allowed there. But, you know, that also, you go around full circle there to the idea that everyone, there are times that people who eat plant-based diets need a good treat. I did Rip and Jill's wedding cakes. They did have cakes at their wedding.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and he wanted a chocolate cake, and so that's what they had. But, You and I talk often. I heard you talking about it with Chad. About, you know, people say to me, "You're a dessert chef, right?" And I go, "Yeah, I make desserts." Well, you're not fat. You're kind of slender.
Super slender.
Yeah. Well, I just finished writing an all chocolate book with 100, 110, 115 recipes, I think, and certainly had to do tasting all along the way. I happened to taste. Little bitty. I taste on my grandchildren's tasting spoons. But the fact is that I don't live on these desserts. I know what I'm tasting for flavor. I'm tasting for consistency. I'm tasting for texture. And then I've had enough because they're really good. They're really good.
Was there something you learned about chocolate that you didn't know before?
There was a lot I learned about chocolate that I didn't know before, and I've been using chocolate because my classes are popular, but it's the chocolate classes that are really popular, or in a class that isn't a chocolate class, invariably someone will say, well, what if we put a little chocolate in this? You know, it just is this universal thing. One of the main things I touched on before was the percentage, you know, the idea that bittersweet doesn't necessarily, it's just a marketing label, almost like natural. That was very interesting to me. Also the idea of, well, what makes chocolate vegan? I was stunned to learn that in this country, anyway, up to 12% milk solids in some form is allowed to be contained in a dark chocolate. So you had best read your labels.
Print.
It's disclosed, but it wouldn't occur to me until I learned this. This is law. If I saw a bar of dark chocolate, I would assume that it is a, you know, only chocolate and milk.
Many people have made that mistake.
And it's like, and you, because organic has become a very popular marketing tool. So the chocolate makers that I trusted or liked, for example, have been bought up by the bigger guys and then the biggest guys. And we're talking about a different, I'm not talking about shared lines here. I'm talking about seeing milk powder. Green and black will list organic milk powder.
But I used to love them a long time ago, and I don't anymore.
Yeah, well, they were bought by Cadbury
and
then
by Kraft.
But the fact is, they're still talking about shared equipment. By law, you can have up to 12% milk. In some form. So I suggest that you really look at your label because for at least it's annoying and at worst it's quite deadly. That was a really big one for me. So when people say, well, what makes chocolate vegan? It's a bit tricky. The sugar needs to be vegan. What makes sugar vegan? If your sugar is organic, it's vegan. It's vegan. It hasn't been processed through bone char. So you want to look for organic sugar. And even, you know, that's become a whole...
Oh, my God. It's
confusing thing.
We can't talk about chocolate anymore.
But we can talk about chocolate. And I want to use a chocolate that is a compassionate chocolate, not
right.
a...
No slavery. Your chocolate.
There's a lot of slavery. So I talk about that in the book as well. But mostly, I just want you to like it.
Okay. Mm. Well, Fran, thank you for joining me. And it's all about food. And we really are looking forward to when this book is in print, which will be sometime in 2013.
Fall.
In the fall. Great. Well, thank you for joining me. And it's all about food. Please visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where I live. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And we'll be back next week. Have a delicious one. Bye.